Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Right, it is time for us to look at this week's documentary on Distant Pod. Ellis James, you are up to bat.
I thought, I am so capable of discussing Wales at the World Cup. We have plenty of listeners who aren't from Wales. I talked to one of our Australian expat listeners in the hotel prior to the game, which is very exciting. I'm afraid I can't remember your name. But I thought, let's mix it up a bit and choose a different sport. So I found this on Netflix. It's a documentary about Kenyan running called Unknown Runner.
Running. It is perhaps the oldest, most deeply human of sports. Man stands upright, man learns to walk, man runs. Today, long-distance running is a phenomenally popular sport, the marathon in particular. But isn't it strange that for such a popular sport, so little is known about the top athletes? Many of the world's best runners hail from Africa, but they seem to come out of nowhere. All that is about to change.
My name is Geoffrey Kipsanga Moror. I'm 19 years old. I live in Keyo in Kenya, and I would like to run marathon this year.
Geoffrey's story is typical of many other Kenyan runners competing in major road races across the globe. They grow up, work hard, and try to make ends meet. A career in athletics offers these young talents an escape route, a chance to achieve greatness. And if they succeed, they will become role models for aspiring young athletes. From the dirt roads of Kaptagat in Kenya.
Yeah, I see people are dropping down now. We call it separating the dirt and and the real wheat.
To the prestigious Berlin Marathon. A story of struggle, sacrifice, and dedication. Experience Geoffrey's journey in the Unknown Runner.
So Unknown Runner follows the story of Geoffrey Kamoro, I think I'm pronouncing that properly, who is running the 2012 Berlin Marathon. He's a great runner. At the time, he's only 19. He's part of the sort of the Kenyan national setup. They've got very high hopes for him. He's already, by that age, an excellent half marathon runner. So he works as a pace setter. And it just follows him where he lives. It goes back to the sort of the village where he grew up. They go back to his school and it shows him training with his mates. And the first thing, I mean, there's plenty to talk about in this doc, but the thing that struck me most was bearing in mind that distance running must be such a huge part of Kenyan national pride and national identity, because they've produced so many amazing distance runners. you know, over the years, everyone involved in that distance running program seemed to have such a healthy attitude towards it. And they're all saying stuff like, well, running's fun, isn't it? And everyone can run. And when you're a baby, you learn to walk and then you need to learn to run.
Well, his old coach and teacher says, he's got the same legs you've got. He's got the same lung and chest.
He's got the same heart you've got. It's just he trains a lot and so he's a brilliant runner. But it's open to all. And even though it's his first marathon, he ends up finishing third in a time of 2 hours, 6 minutes, which bearing in mind he'd never run the distance before. just
it's insane.
It's crazy. And I think as well you get quite a good insight into just bearing in mind the distances they run. I don't think this really comes across on the telly very often, because when I first started watching the London Marathon, which would have been my introduction to marathon running.
Yeah.
As a kid or a teenager, I assumed that they were jogging, but they were jogging a little bit faster than everyone who's normal. And actually, they are running at an incredible pace for over 26 miles.
Yeah.
And I think you get a feel for that because it shows them doing a lot of sprint work and a lot of endurance work, a lot of strength work. I also hadn't realised how technical marathon running is. Like, they have the meeting in the hotel on the day before the game where they're talking about the water stations and how he's going to set the pace. I didn't realise as well, if when you are setting the pace on behalf of like a teammate who's trying to win the race or trying to set a record, a bit like cycling, this hadn't occurred to me, in the way that when you're at the front of the peloton, it's a wind resistance thing. You're allowing the cyclist behind you, who's actually trying to win the race, to conserve energy because he or she will be cycling in your slipstream.
Yeah.
And it's the same with marathon running. So the way they were talking about the conditions, I've never run a marathon. I was quite naive as to how much prep had gone into it at that level. So I enjoyed that. I just love watching him run around Kenya as well in training. He's such a likely bloke. He's only 19.
As a doc, though, there were loads of bits I thought were going to be, could be expanded on.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought as a documentary, I thought it was weak.
Yes, okay? I agree with that.
I think it was too slow. I think it didn't really know what it was doing. I think they were just, it seemed thrown together in parts, didn't really know what the focus was on.
It's stylistically a couple of different things as well.
It is a complete, yeah. I mean, as a sort of National Geographic expose of that country, there's some beautiful parts of it. There's some beautiful shots.
Yeah.
But there seems to be no real rhyme or reason to it, but there's some beautiful shots. The bit I found, like when I watch docs, this is why people who don't like sport like this podcast.
Okay.
I really want to know about the people that are competing. I don't like rock climbing, but I can watch a documentary about it if I get inside that person, we what drives and what makes them tick. And there wasn't enough of that. The first bit of the doc that I found fascinating, they didn't do anywhere near enough of.
What was that?
Was when they set that camp up, and I thought, you're doing something you love to do. You're in a poor country. So you get together, one fella's preparing the vegetables, one's doing the meat, you do the dishes on a rotor, one's washing the kit, one's hanging the kit out.
Yes.
I love that community. I love the... I thought, Christ, I'd love to be there, because that's boiled that person's life down to what do you love to do and what are you good at?
Yeah.
Let's just do that with like-minded people and we're all in this together. So that bit of it I loved. But for an hour and 10 doc, it went on and on. It's the first doc I've watched in a long time where I stopped it and thought, Christ, how long's left? It's an hour and 10. And I stopped it. It was like 38 minutes gone. I thought, this can't be 38 minutes. Because it doesn't know what it's trying to do. Like, there's the bit at the end when they put that really thumping music on in the marathon. I thought, you can't just engineer excitement now. You've got to build to something, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's no reflection on the people in it. It seemed interesting people.
Yeah.
And this, here's a point which, please don't take this the wrong way.
Okay.
They all speak one more language than I do, which is impressive, right?
Yes.
But some of those Kenyan accents were so strong when they're speaking English that I was really struggling to understand what they were saying. Not so much Jeffrey. I could get him. That was easy. But some of the older fellas particularly, right?
I had subtitles on for all of it.
Yeah, I had subtitles on as well.
Yeah, I should have done that. I didn't. Yeah. I didn't do the subtitles.
I put the subtitles on for the whole thing.
I watch all telly with subtitles.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah.
I should have done that. That would have been much easier to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I started doing it when I couldn't understand the accents in The Wire.
Oh, okay.
And it really helped.
Yeah.
Having subtitles, and since then
that's a good point.
I always do it now. So I think I probably understood
a drug deal.
I think I probably understood slightly more than Mike did for that reason, because I never struggled to understand him.
But all that notwithstanding, they were just bits they focused on. I thought, I don't need to see that. I don't need to see you put all the water bottles in a bath.
Yeah.
I thought that bit was strange. Yeah, I agree.
There's lots of weird
also,
shots.
Also, if that's how they're cleaning the water bottles, I've got some issues.
Me too. That's exactly what I've
got. A lot of strep throat going on.
I don't think that a hotel bath, the night before elite athletes are using those drinks bottles.
I couldn't be what they were doing. Forward.
No.
I couldn't work. What are they I doing? Was it hot enough that they were disinfecting them?
I thought he was trying to keep them cold. And then you realise, I think he was cleaning them, and that's just
I think
an
he was washing
to
them.
Do, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that was the right... He didn't use any detergent. It was, yeah.
I love looking at... Because you realise, it's one of those ones you watch again, you have to step back sometimes and realise how lucky you are with everything you have, right? Because it was just little things like crossing the street when there's heavy rain, and you're up to your, you know, there's no drainage. They're showing that bit where the water just jetting out of the... I never think of Africa, because this is growing up watching British TV and the news, as being this green place with loads of rain.
Yes.
And they must get, you know, when it dumps rain there, it fucking dumps rain. So there's the bits where they're running through the sort of cliffs, those lush, like almost like a sort of like a jungle sort of look to it. Mm. Beautiful looking place, right? Mm. Gorgeous looking countryside. The fellas themselves seem interesting blokes who've got stories, you know, and I wanted to hear about their struggle. I wanted to see,
me too, yeah.
Like that school teacher. I wanted to hear more from him. I wanted to hear more about the people in the village. I wanted to hear what the youngsters had to say about it. I wanted to hear more from. I didn't really give a monkeys about the Belgian fella or the Dutch coach. I didn't find that
they seemed to concentrate on the Belgian fella and the Dutch coach as if that was the interesting bit.
When they turned up at Berlin,
yes.
Why are we watching that bloke who's like one of the most boring men I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, the young guy who was telling him where to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, well, you're...
And talk to him like he's a kid.
He's a really good runner.
I don't want to see you. I want to see him.
He'll nail this.
Yeah.
You probably don't need to tell him where to be.
Yeah.
He'll probably be all right.
He knows he's got to have breakfast at 6 a.m. for a 9 o'clock race. He's been...
Yeah. He'll be on it.
He's one of the country's top distance runners.
Exactly. Yeah, you're running at 9, so we want to reach around 6 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Oh, I've never thought of that. I usually have a big fire.
I was going to roll out at 10 too.
What should I have? Sort of like Cocoa Pops and a can of lager? No.
It's not a 10K.
Cocoa Pops and a can of lager. Please, barkeep.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So I thought it was a missed opportunity. I thought if you'd have put that in the hands of a really good documentary maker, that story. Because at the end, I didn't give a fuck about the Berlin Marathon at the end.
That's the point. That's the hard bit. What is your end point?
Yes.
Not necessarily before you start, but so what?
Know where you want to end
up. The story arc, right?
Yeah.
So what's the story arc? Do you have to carry on filming with him until he wins something?
Yeah, yeah.
Risk that. He wins New York a couple of times.
Yeah, he won it in 2017 and then in 2019 again.
But, you know, do you need to get it out there? I understand that in terms of your financing. I get that. But there are so many bits in there. The bit where he says it's one of the Kenyan races that they film and he says that the whole field is talented, whereas if he goes to a half marathon in Zurich, maybe only 10% of the field is massively talented because it's full of idiots like me.
He won the...
And I'm not endangering him.
He won the world half marathon championships in Cardiff.
Oh, wow.
I ran in that and I didn't endanger him. That, just as an example.
I tell you what was in danger. That dickhead cameraman just stood in front of the race start.
Yes, I did.
There's about 2,000 people take off fast. And he's right in the way of them all.
Because I was assumed that every Kenyan is amazing at distance running. And they did say, oh, yeah, you know, for like a fun run, people will be doing it in times that are absolutely crazy. No one is doing fun in half marathons in Kenya dressed as a rhinoceros or with a fridge on their back, dressed as a shower.
When you see like people in the West Indies and they talk about sprinting, how integral that is to life in Jamaica, and how there's so much onus put on who's the fastest person in your town, your village, whatever. You know,
yeah.
School sports are massive. There was that really interesting bit about Kenya when they're saying, you know, this is how people know they can be successful on the world stage, just so they can make money for their family and for their and then the thinking behind the training village was the thing is when you come back to the village, because you've made something and everyone knows that, everyone wants a bit of that, and you get put off your trainer. So they set this camp up so people could focus on the important thing to them, which is focus on the training. I loved all that bit.
Mm.
It was just a wasted opportunity, you know. And I don't think that subject's done. You know, we've seen like two or three climbing docs.
Yes,
I would love to see a good doc on this.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There must be a doc out there. Maybe one of our listeners can point us in the right direction. A history of, you know, Kenyan distance running or Ethiopian distance.
How did it start? Why did they start doing distance running? What's the history behind it?
It is interesting because now they've got some really good sprinters. So like Omanyala, who won at the Commonwealth Games in the 100. They've got some really good sort of short distance runners coming through now as well. And that's fascinating because it's just opened up athletics as a way of earning money. But I always think when you look at the times that some of these guys are running who you've never heard of.
2:06 in your first marathon.
Yeah, but you can only have so many people from each country in the Commonwealth Games. Or in the Olympics, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
So there'll be sprinters in Jamaica who miss out on the national team who could quite easily come in the medals. And I always then wonder, why would it be bad to have 8 Jamaican sprinters in the final of the Olympics?
Well, that's...
You're trying to find the fastest bloke in the world?
Yeah, fastest bloke in the world. What if the fastest bloke in the world just had a shit day at the trials?
Yeah.
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 What if the 10 fastest 10,000 meter runners are all from Kenya?
But then the flip side of that is when they bring in qualifying standards.
Yes.
Like to do it like look at the Winter Olympics when people like, you'll never see another Eddie Edwards because.
No, Eric Thiel.
There's now that will never happen again.
Yeah.
That's part of the romance of the Olympics that was, which I liked.
Mm.
But now it's like we've got none of the romance. We're no longer seeing the sort of plucky amateurs.
Yes. But you haven't got
also not seeing the very best in the world.
Yeah, you haven't got the pragmatism of
all of them.
You can bring 8.
Yeah.
Rather than 3, because you're better.
The history of distance running in East Africa would be amazing. And I don't know if that...
Yeah.
I'm absolutely gobsmacked if that documentary hasn't been made. Because I know there are books on this topic. But if you talk to the great marathon runners who are still alive from years ago, it would... Yeah, there's clearly a well-made documentary to be made there.
How nice would when you sat there with your mates, having your meat and your rice and your
Oh, how nice did that? Whatever the cake, the carb cake.
Yes,
that's made from some kind of grain.
Yeah,
no, it's like it looked like maize
or rice. Or,
yeah, it looked fucking lush.
Yeah,
I wanted a bit of that white carb cake.
Yeah, absolutely, because it looked like the secret to me. That and all the training.
It's also that thing of
and CPH. The talent. Yeah.
I like the idea of being hothoused and living in a place where you have one outcome and that outcome is to win a gold medal at a marathon or, you know, half marathon, whatever it is. He won New York in a slower time than he did.
Yes, he did. It was like 2:10 or something.
2:08, I think it was, or 2:09.
It's a bit fucking hilly, mate.
But is it? Is that
yeah,
it?
It's I suppose really it, it,
yeah, I suppose that
not makes, hilly stuff.
That makes a huge difference.
It was really fucking hilly the day I did it, actually.
I was
they added in some fucking hills.
Got the hilly course.
I was great until the travelator.
After 4 hours, you bring the hills out, don't they?
They do, yeah. They can't stop them, then.
Because he did the first one in just over 2:06, and then he went.
That's crazy.
And he won New York in, I think, 2:09.
So bits like you said, I found the water station thing really interesting.
Mm.
I found the map and looking where the prevailing winds are and when you can found all that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they were just, it just seemed like there was bits of stuff stuck together. At the end, they must have thought, fucking hell, this is nowhere near the as dramatic as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Let's put some really loud thumping music in this bit, which is completely incongruous. The rest
One thing I did like is it's the Berlin Marathon, one of the world's great major marathons. He and his mates come first, second and third. Even though they've just run 26 miles in just over 2 hours, they're all given what looks like a yard of Erdinger.
Yeah.
Looks nice.
Looks nice, doesn't it? I'm glasses on my bar.
I need to drink a yard of Erdinger. A yard of Erdinger.
A yard of Erdinger.
Have you had one already?
A yard of Erdinger.
Is that 2 yards of Erdinger?
You're on the third yard.
With my Cocoa Pops.
They do actually do, Erdinger do a really good non-alcoholic one that they sell as being isotonic, which I love as a bit of marketing.
Who does the advert? John Barnes.
John Barnes again. Getting his non-alcoholic life.
Emil Zatopek used to rehydrate after his training with Pilsner. He was like, I love beer.
If you drink one and then you drink water, I think it is more hydrating.
Well, it's only sugar and bloody, yeah. Well, look at one of the rugby league teams who came over from Australia 20 or 30 years ago.
Mm.
And they drank, there's a thing in the paper, how much beer they drank on that tour, and it was vast. Because they're saying it was just a quick way of getting in. What? A, it's a team bonding thing.
Yes.
But quick calories, bit of rehydration. People say dehydrate you. It doesn't dehydrate you, beer, right? If you drink a ton of it and don't drink any water, yeah, it will.
Yeah, I was going to say, tell my tongue and my brain that the morning after.
Yeah.
I think I disagree with you, but yeah.
But they say they would have a drink after every training session and after games. Not get fallen over drunk all the time. But certainly not.
Start to training getting shit-faced.
I used to drink like beer, like ale. And then I read Today We Die Little about Emil Zatopek. And I switched to Pilsner. And now time I have a Pilsner, I think of him. I think of the planet's greatest.
I think he did other stuff as well.
He did other stuff, yeah.
He wasn't just necking Pilsner.
He won the Olympic gold at the marathon. It was the first time he'd ever done the Everest.
That was it, wasn't it? Wasn't he up against... Did you do his book?
I did do his book. It's a fantastic book. It's an unbelievable read.
I seem to remember, wasn't there a quote where he's running and he's asking the other guys if he's going too fast or not?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're 13, all like, this is a bit fast.
And at 13 miles, I think he says something like, is this a normal pace then? And as a sort of joke, the guy who's coming first or second says, no, it's a bit slow. And he goes, all right, see you later. And then off he goes. And he burns him off. And then that is that. And then he wins the gold.
Burns him off.
There was loads of very basic prep he hadn't done. Like he had shit socks. We had a blister after about mile six and all this kind of stuff. But he was just mad. I mean, that's a pick.
I wanted to see a little bit on the dock. So you're there with, all very, very rudimentary. Your facilities. They showed that school that he went to and
the bedroom.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Like a flop house, just unbelievable. But then all had really nice Nike spikes and Nike training kits. So I wanted to see, well, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Where's the Nike reps? Where'd you get spotted? How was that? Because you all seemed to have really nice running kit.
Yeah.
It's a small thing, but there were loads of sort of unanswered questions, or that they would start to talk about something, then shoot off to something else. I thought, hang on a minute, mate. I've seen 135 documentaries now that I probably wouldn't have watched before this podcast.
Yeah.
So, and it's the first time I've watched this and thought, I can make a better documentary than this.
I think even with what they've got, you can make it better. I don't think it's well put together. So I think
that's what I mean. Raw materials, the editing's weird.
Yeah.
I think you could get something much better out of it than they've got. Which is weird because this is quite a well thought of documentary. And I don't quite get why.
Mm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually taking the raw footage that they already have and telling a better story.
Let's remaster it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Let's take it apart. Let's deconstruct it.
Are we allowed to? I'm not sure.
Let's ask them. Let's tell them the documentary shit and we want to re-edit it.
See what they say.
Phone them up. It's fine.
See what they say. Yeah.
Do a full.
No, I just thought it wasn't shit. It was the lovely thing to have on the TV.
Yes.
Because Kenya looked amazing. And I like watching people do sport. But I just thought as a documentary, it didn't do enough.
Right, it is. Oh, do you know what? I was going to say it's book review time, but I haven't said that we're doing a live show at all during this episode.
Oh.
So we are doing a live show in February. at Cardiff's International Arena. So, go. We'd like you to come. Please come. It'd be nice.
Who are we knocking at tell?
That's on the flag.
We've got to do that. We've got to do that. Oh, what does Daddy like?
Cash.
Like that the next day.
Yeah.
Mr. Bubbins.
Where does my keep his money? Under the bed.
That'd be absolutely fantastic. Was it the third?
What don't we like? Bax payment.
Oh dear.
What will we do when our nation schools suffer? Educate ourselves. I'll do my own brain surgery. I'll Google it.
Yay. What is it? February the 3rd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, February the 3rd.
February the 3rd, mate, Friday.
Day before, night before the Wales against Ireland game of the Six Nations, first round of Six Nations matches.
Where I'm guest of honour, the Welsh Rugby Union.
Coach of this, right, mate?
Oh, yeah. I could do that.
I know you could.
I fucking could.
I know. I know you could. In your mind.
I don't understand another 22... the drop off from the try line works, yeah? Still working on that one. But
that's fine. No. I don't know how they don't score immediately from it every time.
I'll get someone in from the foot to do that bit.
That's fine. I'm sure Neil Jenkins got that covered anyway. Keep him on.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
It'd be fine. That'll all be good.
I wouldn't do any worse than Pivakstan, put it that way.
I just think that if you've got the best players in the country, then you could just go on, lads.
Yeah.
Go and express yourself. You've done your video analysis with the other lot, all the other backroom coaches.
Number one thing would be fine. Don't worry about losing. Off you go.
Yeah, we've done that already. It'd be fine.
You've got nothing to lose. Just genuinely put a ball on, then use your skills. You can all do it.
You lot played in the Georgia game. Can't get worse than that. Go on, get out there.
You were rubbish.
You were rubbish.
We don't play for you anymore.
You were all right. You were rubbish. You imagine going round a room.
He said you're rubbish.
You were okay. They all said you were rubbish, but you were okay, I thought. You're my favourite one.
No,
then tell the whole squad of rugby players.
He's going to be on their back.
He's my favourite.
Yeah, Steph said you were shit.
Yeah. If you could all go out there and play like him, we'd be much better. Just immediately alienate.
There are those players who are a constant 8 out of 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And there are
play like him.
And there are some players who can veer from a 1 to a 10.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very much a 6.
Yeah.
Consistent 6, I am.
I would say I veer between a 3 and a 7.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good. You've got that in you.
But those sevens, God, I would think about them.
Yeah.
I would veer wildly from 9 to 10.
Yeah. That's good. You would improve more if you focused on the 3s for me.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, you know, I wasn't the most skillful player on the pitch.
God, no.
Okay.
I was always up there. I was one off.
Yeah.
But I fucking bust my balls all game.
That's good. Yeah. Effort-wise, a 10. Yeah.
I say all game, I got sent off after about half an hour.
I was going to say, all the game you were involved in.
Yeah, for the
parts of the game you could physically influence.
For the bit of the game I was involved in, I did use a triad.
And what is letting other people down? What does that mean?
For the 20 minutes I wasn't letting the rest of my team down by getting sent off.
Do you know what? My book is kind of along the lines of ability and effort and what it means to be part of a team. Mm-hmm. So it's called Penguin Stopped Play. 11 Village Cricketers Take on the World.
Oh, class. This sounds good.
So on Sunday, when I was coaching my daughter's football team, one of the other coaches from Caddoxton Imps, Ryan, came over with this book because he listens to the pod. And he was trying to get me to lose the game, I think. So he kind of gave me a little bit of payola. So he gave me a copy of this book. And it is really good. So it's by a guy called Harry Thompson, who I think you guys will probably have heard of. So he's a writer on the News Quiz, Mary Whitehouse Experience, and then sort of behind Have I Got News For You quite a lot as well. Died in 2005. And he's just got this wonderful style of writing. So he went to uni with Ian Hislop in Oxford. So that's how he sort of found his way into that world. But his cricket team was called the Captain Scott 11 because Captain Scott is obviously the most famous second placer in the world.
Oh, so wow.
They decided to go with that as their name for their team. And they set up the team because he turns up to Brasenose College in Oxford. He arrives there and he says, I immediately sought out the cricket captain, a burly northerner called Phil Hanley, and made my keenness to play cricket clear. What do you do? He asked. Bat or bowl? I was forced to confess that I'd never actually played the game. I wanted to try it. It looked fun on the telly. Seemed pretty easy. Point of fact.
Seemed pretty easy.
Someone lobs the ball in your direction. You whack it for miles. Piece of piss. It was, Handy explained tartly, out of the question that I would be allowed to play. Cricket at Brasenose was an extremely serious matter. Unlike other colleges, Brasenose did not even possess a second 11, let alone a second-rate endeavours to scuff up their hallowed turf on the college square. I could practice and try and learn the game. Look, I'll tell you what I'll do as a concession. Every year we have a one-off novelty game where we wheel out a barrel of beer, everyone gets blind drunk until the players can't stand up. It's a right laugh. I'll let you play in that one. No, I want to play cricket, not get drunk, I protested. I can get drunk on my own time. In that case, said Hanley, you can piss off. And that is when he sets up his own cricket team, called the Captain Scott 11, and they play against other village teams. And it's really interesting to sort of read. So I think Hugh Grant plays for them for a little while.
So what decade is this? Sort of early 80s, so, is it?
80s?
Yeah, this would be sort of early 80s. So he plays for them, Hislop plays for them. I think Hugh Dennis plays for them as well. And it gets to the point where they decided to go on tours. So this book is about them going to India to play matches, going to South Africa, and eventually they stumble across the idea that they're just going to try and play on every continent in the world. And hence the penguin stop play is when they play.
Oh, lovely.
I'm going to say Arctic. Is it Antarctic or Arctic?
Antarctic.
Yeah, there we go.
Polar bears north, penguins south.
That does sound like a right laugh.
It's really good. It's really well written.
And it's one of those games, cricket. I've played a little bit of cricket, and I've played this sort of level of cricket, like pick-up cricket, like, you know, not very good cricket.
Yeah.
Because I can play it, and it's the only sport I've played where I don't really mind if I lose.
Absolutely. And I was very much on that.
I know it sounds daft, but I don't care. It's just fun to be out there having a run around and laugh with your mates. But even like if it's six-a-side football, I would get pissed off with losing. Veteran rugby, I get pissed off.
So the interesting bit with this is that the team eventually splinters into two, where there are the blokes who don't give a fuck if they win and don't try as a result. I mean, they'd rather lose in a not amusing way, but in a sort of noble way. And then Harry and his mates who want to put in all the effort but know their shit.
Yeah, very different mindsets, actually.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a really interesting sort of divide that happens in the club as well. And it sort of filters into their tours then as well, where the ones who want to be on the piss but are quite good but will throw the game away, they want to stay in the nice hotels. And the ones who are a bit shit but want an experience are staying in the shittier hotels. It's really interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
I would never deliberately throw a game or let someone win. But I would try in cricket, but I didn't mind if I lost.
I don't think there's a nobility in losing from a winning position. I think that, you know, if you are and I am shit at cricket.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I wish I was better. I am shit.
Let's all play cricket next summer.
Yeah?
Let's all go have a knock summer. It'd just be fun to do.
It would be fun. So long as there are other like-minded people who, when the ball's in the air and I'm underneath it, will know that I would say 12 times out of 10, I'm not only going to drop it, but also injure myself.
Yeah, yeah. Break your finger and then drop it.
Just let it drop.
Maybe break my face. Oh. I don't know.
Ow. Just sidestep it. Get out of the way of it.
No, but then that's the other attitude of, no, I'm going to go for the catch.
Oh, even better.
And I'm going to be fully committed to the catch. I'm not going to make the catch. And I'm all right with that. So long as everyone else on the 11 is all right with that, then they're my people.
Yeah, you're gung-ho.
Yeah, absolutely. And same with batting.
The sort of person who would have been killed within seconds of the song.
Oh, moments, I would say, of going over the top.
I think I either would have survived the entire war or been dead on day one. Yeah. And I've never been able to work out which one it is. But I certainly wouldn't have died like in 1943. I'd have died in September 39, or made it all the way through.
Right at the start of the phony war.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I'd have fallen off a step or something.
And tripped over something and bayoneted myself, got gangrene and died.
Got into a fight with the Home Guard.
You remember the Home
ow,
Guard?
Ow! Ow! What's that is doing? He's scrapping with that pensioner.
And loser.
Yeah, God, he's
don't tell him, James.
He's been battered. Look at that.
Yeah, so it's called Penguin Stop Play, and it's very much my
ethos. That sounds right on my alley, that does, mate.
It's sort of comparable stuff is probably sort of the Tony Hawk kind of writing or Danny Wallace's sort of stuff. It's that kind of feel to the writing.
And do you know what I find? And this is a sweeping generalisation.
Okay, good.
Purely anecdotal.
Big fan of sweeping generalisations.
Is that cricket is quite a posh boy sport.
Yes.
On the whole. Now, obviously not in India, and that is it's that everyone plays it. But I mean here. But the posh people I've met in cricket are far less.
Oh, most of them all right.
Than yes. The posh people you meet in rugby.
100%. Yeah, no one's ever done a shit in a pint at a cricket match that I've been at.
There's none of that stupid laddish bollocks with cricket. They're nice posh. All the cricketers I've met are nice posh.
No, I 100% agree with you.
Yeah.
Nice posh, and that's why there's nothing jarring about the fact
I can imagine Boris Johnson being in the rugby team at this prep school.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Not the cricket team.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. He'll want to play the rugby in the wall game.
Yeah. Cricketers don't
be an arse. No.
Alex James' autobiography.
Cricketers don't drink piss. The second album from Alex James.
Yeah. We're drunk, but we're not cunts, was the first one.
Yes.
Cricketers don't drink piss.